first months after President Trump ordered a sweeping review of national monuments in America, we're getting a first glimpse today at what possible changes might look like. Interior Secretary Ryan Zinke, who handled the review, gave his recommendations to the president yesterday. And while the report has yet to be made public, details are starting to come out.
The Washington Post, citing people familiar with the report, says that Zinke is recommending changes to at least three national monuments established by recent presidents, including Bears Ears in Utah, which could potentially be looking at a significant reduction in protected acres. In addition, land that's freed from federal protection could potentially be opened up to new mining or drilling. But before anything that could happen, the president would have to take action on the recommendations.
For more on this and the conflict over federal land ownership, especially out west, we turn to John Ruppel. He's an associate professor of law and a fellow at the Wallace Stegner Center for Land Resources and the Environment at the University of Utah. John, thanks a lot for being here today.
Hi, Veronica. Thank you for having me.
Well, John, as we said, this report, it isn't public, but some of the details are starting to trickle out. What do we know so far about these recommendations on national monuments?
We don't know a whole lot at this point. What we can say for sure is that President Trump issued an executive order directing the secretary to review 27 national monuments to make some determinations about their future. That Secretary Zinke issued a preliminary report several months ago saying that he thought Bears Ears should be reduced, and that a draft of the final report has been transmitted to the White House. But as you say, we haven't seen the content of that report. We don't know precisely what the secretary recommends, what monuments are in play, or what the president will do in the end.
Now, we should be clear about what exactly a national monument is. It might bring to mind the Washington Monument in D.C., but we're talking about something pretty different here. Can we start with the basics? What is a national monument?
It's a great question. Let's try and distinguish them from a national park. That may help. If you think about a national park like Yellowstone or Yosemite, those are set aside by Congress to protect those resources within the park boundary and to facilitate visitation and really preserve the resources unimpaired in light of that visitation. A national monument's quite a bit different. It can be set aside by Congress, but the majority of them are set aside by the president through a presidential proclamation. And at least over the last 20-plus years, a lot of those monuments, the landscape-scale monuments, I should say, it's quite common for a president to set aside a small monument, like the Washington Monument, or more discrete sites, but they can also set aside very large monuments. And in the West, that's where things become controversial. For those larger Western monuments, at least since 1996 or so, they've been more likely to be working monuments. So in the case of Bears Ears or the Grand Staircase Escalante National Monument here, both of those allow livestock grazing within the national monument. They allow basically free access. They have roads passing through them. They're easily accessible. Hunting occurs within those monuments. It continues to be regulated by the state. So they're more of a working monument as distinct from a national park.
And what if a private interest had interest in doing something on the land, leasing it, doing something like drilling for oil? Would that be allowed at a national monument?
It depends. The proclamations apply only to federal land, so if there are private inholdings within any of those monuments, that inholding owner would be able to move forward as they had before, as if nothing had changed. If somebody had an existing lease or an existing mining claim within the monument, those valid existing rights are already protected and grandfathered in as well. So those uses could conceivably continue. What most proclamations do is they withdraw those lands from availability for future oil and gas leasing or future mineral development. So it would have a prospective effect that would eliminate that kind of development. But to the extent that leases have already been entered into, those would be recognized.
So to back up a little bit and get some context here, President Trump had ordered Secretary Zinke to look at 27 sites established by previous presidents under something called the Antiquities Act of 1906, and that becomes important as we look at the debate over land use and national monuments today. So can we talk a little bit about what the Antiquities Act is and what it does?
Sure, and I think we need to start a little bit with the U.S. Constitution. The Property Clause of the Constitution grants power over public lands to Congress, and it's a largely exclusive grant. So before the president gets to act with respect to public lands, Congress has to delegate some authority over those lands to the president. And that's what they did back in 1906 when they passed the Antiquities Act. Essentially, you had two different competing bills that had been working through Congress for a couple of years. One bill focused on larger kind of landscape protection. The other bill focused on smaller sites and protection of, you know, what you might think of as an Anasazi cliff dwelling or something of the sort. The compromise allowed the president to set aside national monuments, and it set up two criteria for that. The first being that the area had to contain objects of historic or scientific interest, and the other was that the area had to be the smallest area compatible with the proper care and management of those resources. And both of those determinations were essentially left to the president's discretion. So the Antiquities Act allows the president to create national monuments, to set them aside anytime he feels that there are objects of historic or scientific importance that merit protection. What the Antiquities Act doesn't talk about is the power to rescind or revoke or modify a national monument proclamation. And that's where we're starting to run into a lot of debate. Clearly, there's the possibility that President Trump will issue an order changing those boundaries, and then we'll end up in a debate over whether he can do that.
We're talking right now with John Rubel from the University of Utah about the recent review of national monuments and the conflict over federal land ownership, especially in the western United States, where many of these monuments that seem likely to be under consideration are located, and looking then at the powers of the president and what he could do under the Antiquities Act. Where are the fault lines there? What's the controversy over the president's powers and what he may or may not be able to do with these national monuments?
Yeah, like I say, the Antiquities Act gives the president the power to set aside national monuments. It says nothing about the power to reduce or eliminate those. And that's where the conflict arises. One argument is that had Congress intended to give the president that power, they would have said so explicitly. There were a number of other statutes that Congress had passed that allowed the president to set aside federal lands for various uses, and many of those did, in fact, give the president the power to change or modify those reservations. So if Congress had meant to do it in the Antiquities Act, they would have done it here. They didn't. That seems to imply congressional intent. So the counter argument largely is that presidents over the years, over the last 111 years, have acted on a number of occasions to revise national monuments. The last revision was 56 years ago by President Kennedy. But the argument is that those prior reductions and congressional acquiescence in those implies that Congress was okay with the president having that power. Now, the first point to make is none of those prior reductions were challenged in court, so we don't have any definitive case law on that issue. But it's a bit challenging, one, because in 1976, Congress passed the Federal Land Policy and Management Act, and that statute specifically looked at reshaping that balance of power between Congress and the president with respect to public lands. And Congress exerted more control in that area. So there's a strong argument to be made that even if there was an implicit power, it has since been eliminated by Congress. And the other argument, I think, that's out there is that these prior reductions are very, very different in terms of scope and context. Never before have we seen this review of 27 national monuments based on what appear to be largely political concerns. The prior reductions were all driven by very site-specific issues with individual monuments. The majority of those probably involve things that I would lump together as mapping corrections and corrections of errors in the original proclamation as opposed to politically driven considerations. There's also a large class of monuments that were reduced for reasons having to do with national security, so building airports for airfields for military aircraft or providing raw materials to support the war effort during World War I. So they're very different than what we're talking about today.
We're talking right now with John Ruppel from the University of Utah about the recent review of national monuments and the conflict over federal land ownership, especially in the western United States. Changes could be coming to some of these national monuments, and we're finding out what that could look like.
And you can join in at 800-642-1234. What do you make of this review of national monuments? Do you agree with the president when he says that states should have more say in how public lands are used? Are you worried about what this could mean for conservation? Do you think the federal government owns too much land, especially in the western United States? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or post on the Central Time Facebook page.
We'll continue the conversation in a little bit here on Central Time. This is Central Time. I'm Veronica Rickert.
And I'm Rob Ferret. We continue our conversation with John Ruppel of the University of Utah, looking at public lands, national monuments, and the Trump administration. A recent review of national monuments suggests that changes could be coming for some protected lands out west. We're learning more about what that can mean and why this is such a hot-button issue.
And you can join in at 800-642-1234. What role do you think the federal government should play when it comes to protecting lands? Would you support a rollback of some protections for some national monuments? And what questions do you have? You can call us at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or post on the Central Time Facebook page. And John, looking at the large concentration of these national monuments in the American West, including Bears Ears in Utah, where you are, and this is a much more contentious issue in some parts of the country. Can you walk us through who's on the different sides of this debate and then what they have to say?
Sure. I think one of the things that makes Bears Ears very unique is that it was a monument that was set aside after five Native American tribes came together and petitioned the president to do this. So it's unprecedented in that respect. So you had the Navajo Nation, the Hopis, the Ute Indian Tribe, the Ute Mountain Ute Indian Tribe, and the Zunis coming together and asking for this monument and a role in really protecting their heritage in this landscape. And I should say they were also supported by 25 additional supporting tribes. So that makes it unique in that regard. When you look at the landscape itself, what the Congressionally Chartered National Trust for Historic Preservation has said is that nowhere else in the United States are there so many well-preserved cultural resources found within what they described as a striking and relatively undeveloped natural landscape. So it's a very special landscape. When you look at it, the estimates are that it contains over 100,000 archaeological sites reflecting over 11,000 years of Native American history and use. So it's a really special place. It's a place that is becoming increasingly known and increasingly visited. So we're seeing impacts from pot hunting and looting of archaeological sites. We're seeing impacts from just the sheer increase in visitation and people starting to love this area to death. So there's a real importance to it, and those are the issues that I think are driving its protection. On the other side, about two-thirds of the land in the state of Utah is federally owned. So while the new national monument doesn't increase federal land ownership, it does change the lens through which land managers view this landscape. So it means likely more protective management, and locals in rural parts of the state often associate that with less opportunity to develop commodity-type resources. So more difficulty in drilling for oil or gas, or for mining for uranium, or timber production, or potentially running livestock on this landscape. But as we said, to the extent that those rights are already in place, those valid rights are protected. But there's still this tension, this concern that there is a lot of federal land out here. How the federal government goes about managing it impacts local communities, and people in rural parts of the state are really concerned about that.
Let's take a caller now. We've got Adam joining us from Green Bay. Adam, hello.
Hey, how you doing?
Good. What did you want to ask?
Well, you know, I just got done with work. I just jumped in the car, kind of heard, you know, the conversation about, you know, government control of federal lands, you know, out west. But just in general, you know, my concern is that, you know, eventually, you know, these lands will become privatized. You know, if we hand them over to private interests, or if we just let them go, we're never going to give them back. And once they're gone, they're gone. And, you know, we live in a capitalistic society where, you know, if you know, people are going to be looking to make money off those, and that means that certain demographics of people aren't going to have access to them, and you know, national parks or parks in general, or you know, those lands that are ran by the government, you know, those parks were meant to be accessed by, you know, everyone.
Adam, thanks a lot. Got your comment there, and I want to know what you think about that, John. There are some environmental groups who are thinking along the same lines as Adam, are concerned that this would amount to handing over what is now federal land to oil drilling, for instance, to private interests.
Yeah, well, thanks, Adam. I appreciate your call. First, to echo a point he made, these lands are public lands, belong to all Americans, so they're not owned uniquely or disproportionately by residents of Utah or these rural communities where these national monuments occur. So everybody has a right, everybody should have a voice in their management. Now, I want to, Adam mentioned that this notion of these lands might be sold. That's not necessarily, I think, going to happen pursuant to this review. There is a separate independent push by some states and some local groups to try and obtain title to public lands in the West, but I think that needs to be set aside from the current monument review. But to the point I think Adam was making is that even if these lands aren't sold, if you have a long-term lease that allows for energy development on that landscape and you start seeing oil wells or natural gas wells proliferating, you start seeing pipelines and other infrastructure needed to support that, that question of ownership starts to become kind of academic. The reality on the ground, as somebody that might want to visit that landscape, might want to recreate, might want to view it, it's very different regardless of who owns it.
Adam, thanks for that. And we'll go to another caller now. We've got Eric next in Lancaster. Eric, hi.
Hi. I'm just finishing a book on the life of John Muir, and a lot of the things we're talking about there were things that John Muir fought so hard for to conserve the land and the resources and the water and the trees in our forests and stuff, he worked with Teddy Roosevelt on trying to get the land set aside, and Teddy Roosevelt spoke to Congress on trying to get some land set aside, and he said that land should be set aside forever for the use and benefits of our people as a whole and not sacrificed to the short-sighted greed of a few.
Eric, thanks a lot for that comment. And John, is there a concern that that sort of land ethic that might underpin some of the creation of these national monuments could be at stake here?
Absolutely. That's the heart of the argument coming from the environmental community, is that these lands were set aside because they are truly special, because they're unique. And the minute we remove them from our national conservation land system, that there's a risk that something is lost. We'll have to wait and see what the president chooses to do. We'll have to wait and see if there are changes recommended or made with respect to management of these lands. But if they're open to energy development, that could definitely impact the nature of the resource.
And thanks a lot for that call, Eric. Appreciate it. And John, this report is in the hands of the president. What do you expect is going to happen next?
It's really difficult to say. We're anxious to see the report. We're anxious to see the recommendations that Secretary Zinke made, and we're anxious to see what the president chooses to do with that. You know, he has a number of options. He could leave monuments as they are. He could choose to rescind or revoke designations or change management prescriptions. That almost certainly will lead to litigation. You know, he could also say, look, there are some legitimate concerns being voiced by Western states and rural communities that we need to think more carefully about how rural communities are impacted by designations. We need to think about the economic impacts of monuments. And I think a very good argument can be made is that that discussion needs to happen in the halls of Congress, where we can think comprehensively about what our vision for our public lands is, the trade-offs that we're willing to accept in terms of conservation versus commodity development and economic development. So there's the possibility that these questions could go to Congress, but we'll have to wait and see if the president chooses to follow that route.
John, thanks a lot for joining us today.
My pleasure. Thank you, Veronica.
John Ruppel is an associate professor of law and a fellow at the Wallace Stegner Center for Land Resources and the Environment at the University of Utah, joining us to talk about possible changes coming to some national monuments.